podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Ever wonder what it takes to go from being an amateur to professional in sport? Welcome to An Athlete's Blueprint, the podcast that uncovers the secrets of champions, to let you know what it really takes to win a medal or break a record. Speaking to players and coaches, I capture insights from the training ground to the world stage, having the conversations normally kept behind closed doors. An Athlete's Blueprint is the podcast for sports enthusiasts starting out or those chasing the next podium. Get ready to rethink what you know about competing. Let's meet Erin Harris, who became Britain's strongest disabled woman in record time after starting her journey just after the pandemic. Despite missing her ulnar bone, half her wrist bone, and two fingers, she's been a massive success. We pick up on how Erin competes and wins despite her limb difference, what it's like to compete against people in her category and outdoing able-bodied athletes, dealing with the social media and being in the public eye, the strongman community and who works behind the scenes, and the impact of mental health. Check out Erin's story.
My biggest advice probably would be just don't be scared. Jump in, do what you can. I find a lot of women are just worried because they can't as much as men. Don't worry about that. Women are on their own league of their own. Just have fun with it. Just jump in. Don't be afraid. That's what I tell anybody when they're too scared to do something or they're worried they're going to fail. Just don't worry about it. Just jump in. It'll all come naturally.
And did it all come naturally for you?
A little bit, yeah. I think so. So my gym journey started with, it was originally a weight loss journey. And everything kind of fell into place. I started at the gym lifting weights. Then I discovered strongman and strongwoman. And then I discovered the disabled strongman and strongwoman. And then it all kind of just grew organically for me. So I just kind of, I went with the flow. And thankfully, my story worked out quite positively.
And when you first started out, what were some of those first sort of training sessions like?
So originally when I joined the gym, I had no idea what I was doing. I was turning up, I was jumping on the treadmill for 20 minutes and calling it a workout. My husband then joined the gym with me and kind of showed me how to lift weights, how to do all different sorts of things. Obviously it was a little bit difficult for me at the beginning, because of my arm, figuring out certain lifts. But I realized quite early onto my lifting journey that I was quite strong. Might be something here for me. It was just figuring out how to do, for example, deadlifts, how to do squats with my arm, my shoulder press and my dumbbell press. They're obviously just one-armed, lying flat on the bench. It was just kind of adapting to what I kind of can't do. So that was the most difficult bit of my journey at the beginning, was figuring things out.
And when I sort of watched some of your clips, I was in awe of you. So in terms of the disability that you have and the way you've had to adjust, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so my disability is called congenital ulnar dysplasia, and basically, so there's my normal hand, there's my little hand. I was born without half of my ulnar bone, which also affected my wrist and my hand and my fingers. So the arm itself, it's not very strong. It's kind of just kind of flops to the side. But yes, it was just figuring, I've gone my whole life doing things one-handed, it's never really been an issue, but when it comes to certain lifts like the overhead press, I took to that quite naturally, and a lot of people are like, oh my God, how can you do that? Like, how do you do the balance? And I'm like, I don't really know. I think it's because I've gone my whole life being unbalanced and doing everything one-handed, and my core is obviously adapted to that. I just figured it out.
So there was no kind of coaching or
for the first sort of year of my gym life, I didn't even know what strongman and strongwoman was at this point. But for the first year, it was just me figuring out how to do things. When I deadlifted, I used to use a D handle and I'd wrap about 3 or 4 different wraps around my arm just to stabilize myself. And for squats, I would do like the safety squat bar, and I was on my own for quite a while, and then I was actually discovered on TikTok by Mark Tonner, who's my coach now. So that's kind of where my strong woman journey started. It was on TikTok, just uploading a couple of videos. That was fun.
And, you know, meeting Mark for the first time, whether it was a phone call or in person, what was it about him that resonated with you?
So he messaged me on TikTok. He said, you need to do disabled woman. And I remember the message coming up on my watch, and I ran to my phone. I was at work and I ran to my phone like, oh my God, Mark Connors messaged me, because I knew who he was through the internet. So I messaged him. I was like, it's something that I had thought about, but at the same time, I was like, no, I could never do that. I don't have the confidence to do anything like that. So he texted me back and he said, here's my number. Ring me when you finish work. So I rang him that night. That was November 22, I believe. On for about 2 hours, just chatting about everything. And I think the best thing about Mark is he's also a one-handed athlete. So for him to be able to coach me was probably the best, because he's the best of the best. He's 3 times world's strongest disabled man. So he knows what he's talking about. And the two of us are in the same sort of predicament when it comes to our disabilities. So he's got the person never to coach me, really. And he's been amazing. He coached me for 6 months leading up to England's Strongest last May. And we'd never even met in person at this point. So the first time we met was actually at my first competition.
Wow. Yeah. And how was it kind of coming face to face with someone that you admired and then also became your coach?
Yeah, it was a really nice moment, actually, because it was, he could finally show me how to do certain things rather than kind of just ring me up and explain it over the phone. We gelled together quite easily, but it was just nice to be able to put a face to the name. And actually sit down with him for a little while before the competition and talk through things. And I could talk to him about what, like, problems I've had with certain lifts, and he could show me there and then in front of me. So I learned a lot in the 48 hours that I was in Manchester for that competition, to be honest. It was really good.
And psychologically, having Mark in your corner and giving you some wisdom before the first competition, did it change your strategy or game plan?
A little bit. Obviously, he's got all the insider knowledge. He's been doing it for years. So I think that really, really helped. And I didn't feel, as much as I was the new girl coming in, I didn't feel like the new girl, because Mark had filled me in on everything and everyone and what's going to happen next and the flow of competition. So I felt like I knew what I was doing before I even turned up, really. I mean, I was still absolutely shaking when I got there, but I felt a little bit more confident knowing I had Mark beside me. And every event that I did that weekend, he was there beside me, shouting at me and giving me commands and telling me what to do. And not in a bad way, obviously.
Yeah,
having him there was just really good, really good. And then when I continued on to other competitions, if he wasn't there, I felt fine, because I knew he was the other end of the phone if I needed him.
And stepping into that arena, you know, when you're going to compete, and you're looking around, how did you calm your nerves?
I'm quite good at tunnel vision. I'm just focusing in. Like, I'll mingle with everybody and I'll chat to everybody and have a laugh with everybody before a lift. But when I know, like you spoke to before, she's like, right, Erin, you're up next. You're after this person. As soon as she says that, I'm in the zone. And I kind of almost just zone everybody out. I don't really realize there's people around me. I just focus on me and what I'm doing and the referee in front of me, so I kind of just blank everything out. I can hear people talking, I can see people looking at me, but they're not real in my head when I'm stood up there doing what I'm supposed to be doing. It's a weird one.
And I'm not saying that you do have, but when you have rivals or, you know, fierce competitors next to you or anything like that, how do you deal with the distractions?
Again, I just thought it out. I know my capabilities and I'm confident in myself. So anything that anybody ever has to say to me online or in person, because I have had people try call me out and things. I'm confident in myself and I know I can beat certain people. So I'm fine.
So when people called you out, what were they necessarily calling out about? Is it about your skill? Is it about, you know, what was it about you that they didn't like?
There has been times in the past where when I first joined the competition, there's people that weren't in the competition because I wasn't disabled enough to compete against them, is their words. And it was fear. I was the new girl coming in. And not to big myself up or anything, but I was stronger than them. And I think they just kind of knew they were in trouble. And I kind of just ignored it. And then every now and then I'll get a notification on Instagram. Somebody will send me a screenshot of something like, oh my God, have you seen this? This person is trying to say they've done better than you. And I'm just like, I don't actually care. unless you're going to come up to me, come in front of me and then let the weights do the talking. I'm not there for the negativity or the drama. I'm there to turn up, lift the weights, and go home. I'm happy. But yeah, there is some people that are they're not very happy that I'm around. Let's say.
And how satisfying has it been to beat them?
Really good. Yeah, really, really good. And it's do you know what? It's not even the win in the competitions. It's I feel like I'm winning because I'm making all these friends in the competition. I've got all these opportunities like to go on this podcast. I've been on the radio. I've been in the newspaper. Like all these opportunities are coming to me, and to me, that's more than getting over the competition because I want to spread my story. And if I can help someone else, then that I've won already. So for anybody that's coming in that's being negative, I've already won before I've even stepped in the door.
I love that attitude. I love the way that you just get on with it. You almost are above it all. Of course, you know, like anybody, I'm sure things do get under your skin, and sometimes people do live in your head rent free, so to speak. But I like it. I let the weights do the talking.
Yeah, that's what it's down to.
And when it comes to your story. Can you talk about the past and how, you know, things built up to how, you know, where you are today?
I've never really been a sporty person. Like I said earlier, my gym story started in, we were just coming out of lockdown in 2021, and I joined the gym to lose a bit of weight before my wedding. And I was going to the gym for about 6-7 months, and that's when I realised, oh, actually, I'm quite strong. But in the past, I've never had the confidence to get up in front of like a room of people and do anything because of my arm. For years and years and years, I hid it away under like baggy hoodies or just put my hand in my pocket or whatever. Just because it's not that I wasn't ashamed of it. It was just that I just couldn't be bothered with people looking at me and things like that. Things like that kind of really annoyed me. But I think coming into the sport that I'm in now has really made me accept ability. My arm is my biggest asset right now, my biggest weakness. And if I didn't have my little arm, I wouldn't be where I am. Yeah. It is a blessing in disguise, and it might have taken me 28 years to realise, but here we are. But yeah, growing up, obviously I got bullied quite a lot. It wasn't very nice. It wasn't really till I was in my 20s that things like that kind of settled down, but I can now use my disability and I can now use my little arm to inspire others and help others. There's charities out there for people with arms like mine as well, and I want to work with them. Just if there's a little girl growing up with an arm like mine, at least her parents can see, actually, she'll be all right. So that's my main goal in my journey, really.
And, you know, given that you are on social media and things like that, has anyone with a similar condition reached out to you for advice or support?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of people in my gym themselves come to me, like people say, oh, I've not the same condition as me, but just saying how inspiring my story is and my Instagram and things like that. But I have had, there's one family in particular that really stick in my mind. They have a baby who was born with an arm like mine. And the mum and dad have followed me on Instagram and they messaged me and they were like, we were so worried about our little one growing up. And we've now found your Instagram and we just know she's going to be fine. And to me, that was probably one of the highlights of my, I say, lifting career, because this happened last year. But that's the things I live for. That made my week, really, rather than winning all these trophies and medals. Things like that is the main the main focus.
I love that. And it's the community impact that you have. It kind of ripples out.
Yeah.
And how do you like representing your town and, you know, the people from that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I when I was looking at your socials, there seemed to be a lot of pride for Berkshire.
Yeah. Yeah. So I so originally I'm from a small town in Ireland called Roscommon. It's not huge. I went home 2 weeks ago and I had people coming up to me like, oh my God, you're Erin. Oh, I've seen your story. And my mum works with children and my sister work with children, and they brought me in to where they work to show off my medals. And it was quite nice going home. It was a little bit different this time. Because I was sitting down with breakfast with my friends, and this woman came over to me. She was like, I've seen you in the newspaper. So that was really, really nice. It was a bit of a pinch me moment. But yeah, here over in obviously Berkshire, I've been in the newspaper, I've been on the radio, and just even just the community where I live, Woodley, they're like, well, Britain's strongest disabled woman lives here, so yeah, it is exciting for the community and for people that know me as well. They can be like, oh, I know this woman, or this woman does this, and like, I work with children myself as well, and one of the dads has gone home to his friends at work, and he's like, oh, Britain's strongest disabled woman looks after my child. So yeah, it's a little bit exciting.
And how do you deal with that sense of responsibility?
It definitely makes me think about what I'm putting online and things like that. When I was younger, I used to just post whatever I wanted and probably didn't think much about it. But it does kind of, there's people out there that are looking up to me, whether I like it or not. And I have that almost sense of responsibility to them and to myself, really, to just make sure what I'm posting is good. Obviously, I am very honest on my social medias, and if I'm having a bad day or my arm does hurt in the winter, things like that, I'll always be very open and honest about things like that. But, I mean, not every day is a positive day in the gym. But, yeah, I am quite careful about what I post online, just for the main reason that there is people watching me, whether it's good or bad reasons.
Yeah, and managing authenticity online is, you know, it's never easy. In terms of the arm, and you said about it hurting sometimes, what's the recovery, or what do you have to do in order to get better again or feel better again?
So usually my arm hurts when it's really, really cold. The elbow gets really, really inflamed. And it's almost a bit like the bones are like crunching together. It feels like it's not very nice. But for me, it's literally just wrap up with a hot water bottle and just rest for a couple of days. Not that I do much lifting with this arm anyway, but just trying to avoid doing anything with it. But it does, it's annoying because then it puts me off the gym for 2 or 3 days. And it's something that I can't help, but at the same time, I'm just like, here we go again. usually the winter months that it affects me. Otherwise, all good. But yeah, it can be very mentally draining as well, just because I know, especially in the lead up to a comp, if I'm training during the winter, I have to take a couple of days off, then I feel like I've gone back a bit. I haven't really, but that's how I feel mentally. So be physically and mentally draining sometimes.
And in those moments where, you know, you're resting and you're not actually able to do anything, what do you do to keep yourself lifted, your spirits high?
That's a good one, actually. I usually have, so what I do is I'll be very open and honest on my Instagram story and say, not training for a couple of days, this is what's happening. And I'm not doing it for people to be in my inbox like, oh, are you okay, hon? It is the reality of someone with a disability who is into any sort of sport. And I like to be open and honest, like I said. But yeah, I'll always have some videos or something in my phone. I'll upload something. At least I'll get a bit of content out there. But yeah, just chill at home with my husband, really.
I love that. And are there any, when you, you know, sit on social media and you watch some of your earlier videos of you training and competing to now, what's it like watching that?
Do you know what? It makes me laugh. I do look back at some of my old videos. Say my squats, for example. I found a video recently of a 120 kilo what I did 2 years ago. And I don't know how I counted it as a squat. There was no depth. It was just really, really bad. And then I look back at my videos now and think, okay, thank God I've sorted that out. But it just baffles me that how did I post that online? How was I proud of that? Obviously, I feel like everybody kind of goes through that in their journey, where at the beginning they think, oh yeah, I can do this, amazing. And then they look back a year later and think, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. But watching the progress, I really enjoy watching my progress. On the days where I feel like I've had a bad session and I feel like I'm not going anywhere, I do look back at my old videos and think, actually, I'm fine. I am where I need to be. If I was like this 2 years ago, what am I going to be like in 2 years?
And do you sometimes have, you know, Mark kind of be like, oh, you know, look back at your old stuff and go, oh, look at you now type thing?
Yeah. Mark is very much, he's a bit of a pusher as well. Like, for example, at Brits, we had Axel Max overhead press. And I was like, yeah, I'll do 35 kilos. And he was like, no, you'll do 40. So he's one of those that's, you know, you can do it. You will do it. You're going to do it. Helps me as well, I think, because sometimes he says it's a confidence thing in me. I need to push myself more. And I do think so. And this year this is the year of me pushing myself. So yeah, then at least then he won't be moaning at me for not doing weights he thinks I can do.
So, you know, we've spoken a lot about being, you know, the strongest woman. For people who aren't aware of the sport, what weights are you lifting in terms of heaviness?
So at Brits, which was in August last year, I had 5 events. So I had dumbbell press for reps, and that was 20 kilos for me. Although I did ask for heavier weights this year, because 20 kilos it's not a lot. That sounds really bad, but yeah, it's not a lot for me. I then had a yoke run. I had 130 kilos. Again, this year I could probably do more. I then had a sled pull, which was brutal. Obviously, one-handed, you're sat on the floor, I've got sandbags on my legs, and you're pulling a sled, and my sled was 230 kilos, which was awful. And then I had axle max, so my max axle at the minute is 40 kilos, obviously one-handed overhead. And then I had stones, which were 50, 60, 70, and 80 kilos. And I use a sling to pick up my stones, because again, that's all one-handed. I can do more on the stones, and I have asked for heavier weights this year. But yeah, that's kind of the average that it's been last year.
And in comparison to, you know, able-bodied athletes, where does that kind of sit?
The average person down my gym, they're quite strong people down there. For a woman, a 40 kilo axle press is really, really good with two hands. So for the fact that I'm doing it with one hand, I'd like to say an axle press is probably event, and it's the most fun event for me anyway. 20, 25 kilo dumbbell is probably average. Obviously, I have to lift it with my knee up to my shoulder rather than with two hands. So that's another thing I kind of have to adapt with. But yeah, in around, I'm kind of sitting on an average two-handed person. Athlete, not just an average person, an average athlete's weights. But obviously, I have to do it all one-handed, so it's that a little bit more harder. And I have had people come down the gym. Like last night, for example, I was doing an overhead press with one hand, and a couple of people were like, oh, let me try. So I made a video about it, made a fun video about it. But a lot of people are like, wow, I don't know how you do it. I don't even know how I do it, but...
So when it comes to, you know, you're actually having to lift these weights in the competitions, I know you say you're confident in your abilities and you know you're strong and stuff, but from a mental perspective and a psychological perspective, what do you draw on?
If at the beginning of a lift, I'll visualise myself lifting whatever it is. And if I can't picture myself in my head lifting it, then I'm not going to lift it. So that's how my head kind of works. I do get really, really annoyed with myself if I do fail a lift, because there has been times where I failed a lift. But I almost need to, like, if I know it's going to be heavy, like, for example, stones or deadlifts, I always tend to listen to some music beforehand and really psych myself up and almost make myself angry. Because everybody knows when you've got that adrenaline, when you've got that anger, you can lift anything. So I do try to get in my own head a little bit. And sometimes I'll think, oh, this person said you can't lift this, Erin. So in my head, I'm like, no, I have to lift it. And I've podcasts before from people, for example, Tom Stoltman, obviously World's Strongest Man. He has gone to psychiatrists and things like that who have kind of like built into his brain that if he doesn't lift this certain thing, his wife is trapped underneath it. He has to lift it. So I don't like to get into that mindset, but at the same time, it is. If there's something that I know is going to be heavy, I kind of fill my head with these kind of negative things, which is, it's probably not great, but it helps me lift.
And when you haven't achieved it and you filled your head with these negative thoughts in order to like generate the power, how do you deal with that?
I'll probably have a bit of a strop afterwards, but do you know what? It's a learning curve for me. If I fail the lift, I'll walk away. Mark is usually always there. He'd be like, don't worry about it. It's fine. We'll get it next time. And then I do quickly get over it quite quick. I'll have a bit of a tantrum afterwards, obviously. Over it, and I'm like, I need to work on for next time. So,
yeah. And in terms of competing and competitions in general, where are some of the places that you've been to and the crowds that you performed in front of?
So my first competition was at Fit Expo in Manchester last May, which is again this year in Fit Expo for England's Strongest. That was quite a big crowd, which was a bit scary because obviously this was my first competition ever. This was the first time anybody outside of my gym was going to see me lift. So there was thousands and thousands of people there. Obviously, they weren't all in front of us at the same time. But there was a lot of people around at that point. My next competition then was East Midlands Strongest Power in the Park. And that was quite a fun event because that was there was an able body competition going on as well as the disabled body one. So it was like the crowd got like a mix of both, and there was a couple of hundred people there. It was like this fun day in the park. It was a really, really sunny day. It was like 30 degree heat. And that was a week before Brits. So that kind of got me really psyched up and really like excited for Brits the following week. The weights were quite light for that one just because of Brits the next week. They were kind of looking after us. And then Brits was like, it was open to the public, but it was in a school, so it was quite private. And there was probably about 100, 150 people there. And then my last competition of last year was Static Monsters. There's probably, I want to say, about 50, 60 people there. It was quite a small gym, and that was the qualifiers. But now I've qualified to compete in Static Monsters Worlds this year, which is in Canada. So hopefully I'll be off to Canada in July.
Oh my God, that's incredible. I'm made up for you. That's going to be well exciting. Have you been over to Canada before?
No, never, never. But yeah.
That's so good. Whereabouts in Canada is it?
Oh, do you know what? They've said the name, but I actually can't remember what it is. It's quite a small little place. But a holiday in one, so...
Yeah, 100%. And in terms of the community then, and, you know, the people that you travel with to the events and things like that, what's the camaraderie like?
So the young man and woman community itself, it's just amazing because everybody... We're all friends. You have the one or two bad eggs, which is you can't have a group of people that all get along. But 90% of everybody, there's just so nobody's there in your messages, like cheering you on, coming together at competitions and chatting. It. Everybody's got their own stories. Everybody's got their own disabilities, and everybody's got their troubles, and we all just kind of come together as one during these competitions. And just show off what we can do, which is really, really nice. But the strongman community itself is just, it is amazing. I've made so many friends through it. I've had so many opportunities, so I'm quite blessed.
And when it comes to having your husband, you know, coming to the events with you and things like that, does that help or hinder you in terms of the pressure?
It definitely helps more than it hinders. Obviously, he's my main support. He's my biggest fan. He's also there with little things that people don't really think about. putting knee sleeves on. I can't put it on my right leg because I can't reach behind my back leg. So even things like that, he needs to be there to kind of help me get suited up, to put my sling on, get me all ready. But then there's days where, for example, at Brits, I got a bit snappy with him because something was happening that I was told I was on next, but then something happened that it took me quite a while to actually get on. And he was like, right, let's warm up. And I'm like, I've warmed up already, just leave me alone. So there is moments like that where I'm just like, just go away. But at the same time, he is there. He's my biggest supporter. He is, like, I can't fault him, really. But yeah, I wouldn't be where I am without him. So he's all right.
And how do the rest of your family take to you being in the sport?
Yeah, I mean, they absolutely love it. My mum, like I said, about 2 weeks ago, I went home for the weekend, and my mum and my sister asked me to come visit their children in their childcare place where they work. And my mum basically dragged me around, like, everybody, look, this is my daughter, this is my daughter. It was like show and tell. family are, they've got me in, obviously, I was in the newspaper back home, and they've got that all cut out and saved at home. So, yeah, there's a lot of pride there, which is really good. I'm hoping this year they can come to more of my competitions. Now that I've got all the dates and all the locations lined up. Mm-hmm. Obviously, all my family live in Ireland, and my husband's family lives here. And they've come to some of my competitions as well, which is really, really nice. But my very first competition, everybody's like, yeah, let's go watch. I'm like, no, please don't. Let me actually get through it first.
Yeah. It's a little bit like when you first get your driving license and then you want to just go around, you know, go around your local area first before anyone jumps in the car with you. And when it comes to, you know, competition day, do you have any lucky charms? Is there anything that you do to, you know, as long as I've got this, then I'll be all right?
Do you know what? Not really. I'm quite an easy person. I'll just kind of turn up, do what I need to do, and go. I'm as long as I've got a good breakfast, a good dinner the night before, and a good breakfast, then I'm good to go. Sometimes I'm too nervous to eat, but as long as I've got fuel in me, I'm good to go. Get me on.
And when it comes to the diet, like, what's the diet of a disabled strongwoman world champion look like?
Well, so last year my diet was just shocking. In my head, I was like, well, I need to be as strong as I can, so I need to eat as much as I can. It wasn't until this year that I've actually hired a nutritionalist to actually, you know, work on my diet a little bit, because at the end of the day, you can't out-exercise a bad diet. I've just been quite lucky last year with everything, but this year I'm really looking after my body. I'm really looking after my diet. So my usual day-to-day eating would be, I'll wake up at 6 o'clock. I'll have 3 eggs for breakfast. I'll have a protein shake and an apple. Then at lunchtime, I'll have either chicken or salmon with some rice and some vegetables. I try to change it up every week because it does get very, very boring when it's just chicken or rice. change it up a little different. Before I work out, I'll have some carbs. I'll have maybe some crumpets and bit of peanut butter, and then for dinner again I'll have maybe a steak, chicken, quinoa, things like that. I don't deprive myself in any snacks or anything like that. If I want a bar of chocolate, I'll go get a bar of chocolate, but I'm more mindful now of what I'm putting in my body. Obviously I also have like the supplements and the protein shakes and things like that. I tie them in, but yeah, I'm starting to look after myself a bit better now, fueling my body with all the good stuff. And I am seeing the benefits now, not even just the weight loss, but I feel like I'm getting stronger over the last 2 months because I'm now fueling my body with the salmon and the chicken and steak and all the good proteins, things like that. So yeah, I'm excited to see where next one's.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really rewarding for you. And yeah, it's exciting. In terms of the kind of like the stretching and that side of, you know, competing and things like that, what do you have to do to get your body sort of feeling warm?
So it's definitely warm. When I first started my gym journey years ago, I would just come in and do what I needed to do and leave. It wasn't until I've kind of hit my nearly 30s that actually I need to warm up, I need to stretch out my body. My body's not as flexible as it was 10 years ago, so I come down to the gym, I've got like a set, depending on what I'm doing, different stretches like that. I do some light sets on whatever I'm doing first, get the body warm, get it going. But yeah, it's definitely important to look after the body. I've got an ice bath at home, which I use probably not as regularly as I should. My husband uses it more than I do, even though he bought it for me for Christmas. But yeah, I have regular sports massages, a physio as well. So that's also really important, just to look after the insides of your body as well as the outsides.
So in terms of that then, you know, having the massages and everything like that, how do you balance the financial commitment of the sport?
It can be hard. It's not a cheap sport in any means. I'm quite lucky that I've got a sports therapist who has come on my team. I want to say my team. As my official sports therapist. So he uses me as advertisement and I get a free massage. So it's a win-win for both of us. But when it comes to like the food is expensive. Travel is expensive. Obviously, there's some gym equipment that I might have to buy for myself, like certain straps. Obviously, my sling that I use, that came from. So it's not a cheap sport in any way, but you can work it. I'm not rich. And here we are.
And for somebody who wants to get started, you know, where would they buy the straps or the gloves or the belt, whatever you need to get started? Did you just get it all off the shelf or was there a special shop that you looked at?
So for my thing, obviously that's made for people with disabilities or things wrong with their arms, things like that. That came from a company called Aldridge. Aldridge is actually a man who's only got, I think he lost his arm in a, I think it was a shark, or like a shark bite or something. So he's a CrossFitter, so he's created that strap, but that came from America. That was about $140 plus God knows what it was for postage. It was about $200 all in, whatever that is in pounds. That was all online, but I had to really search for it and look for it, and it was only because Mark had one that I knew it even existed. So advertised. But then when it comes to like lifting straps and belts, I get all mine from Tough Wraps, because I am an ambassador for them, but I just really like their stuff anyway. But yeah, there is loads of companies out there that do obviously lifting belts and straps and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I would say Tough Wraps and Cerberus are probably the best to go to.
Okay. And when it comes to sponsorships and things like that, are you currently sponsored?
I'm not sponsored per se. I'm an ambassador for some companies like Barbell Warrior and Tough, but I don't get paid to do what I do by any like fitness companies or anything.
And just for complete clarity, can you get paid in this sport?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, some competitions have prize money. There's people out there that will pay for some athletes to fly out to Worlds. Say it was in Florida last year, some athletes got paid to fly out there in exchange for like advertising. I was paid by my mother-in-law's partner. He has his own business. I was paid to do some advertising for him at Brits. So that was quite nice. That was probably my first any bit of money really in the sport. But yeah, there's definitely, I think the higher up you get, and it's who you know as well. But yeah, there's definitely opportunity for money. I wouldn't say you could do it as a full-time job in the disabled strongman community, but there's definitely something out there, a little side hustle.
And when it comes to, you know, sponsors, who would be someone you would love to have on your shirt or, you know, have on the monitor when you come through?
Yeah, I think probably Gymshark or MyProtein. There are two companies that I've used since day one. I only ever buy my proteins and my supplements and stuff from MyProtein, and Gymshark is, apart from the t-shirts that I get at competitions, Gymshark is mostly what I wear when I'm at the gym. And I feel like both companies, they're huge, they're known worldwide, they have like their own little communities, and I feel like everybody knows everybody that's sponsored by Gymshark, or everybody knows everybody that's sponsored by MyProtein. So I feel like if I was sponsored by them, It would really up my lifting career, I think. And I just love them as a brand in general. I'd probably spend far too much money with them, but
it's never a bad thing. I mean, they are a really nice brand, and they have really good ethics and morals. So it's not a bad one to kind of hold your hat on and go from that. And so when it comes to competing, is there anyone, you know, that you'd love to, you know, get on the mats with and go against?
Any of the big names, really. My biggest idols in Strongman and Strongwoman is Rebecca Roberts, Eddie Hall, and the Saltman brothers. I'd love to take on any of them. Obviously, I wouldn't win, clearly. But even for them to just watch us would be just amazing. Tom himself, I sent him a message before Brits. I was like, oh, we're competing this weekend, Disabled Strongman. Could you say a few words for us? And he sent me back a video right before I was about to go on for one of my events. And it just really, really, like, it really pushed me through that event, because I was like, oh my God, Tom Saltman's just sent me a video wishing everybody luck. But yeah, any of those really are probably my biggest idols at the minute.
And when it comes to a Thomas Stoltman, what is it about them that you like so much?
I think with Tom and Luke, obviously they're very open and honest about their lives. They're just genuine people. They're just really, really nice, and they're very relatable. Obviously, Tom's got all of them, and he's very open about that kind of thing. And I think that's the difference between the people's strongman and just somebody that turns up and wins a couple of trophies and leaves. Like I said earlier, winning these trophies is amazing, but what you can put out to the world is even better. It's almost he's leaving his legacy. But yeah, the Stoltman brothers are just, they're definitely someone that I would recommend to anybody. If anybody's getting into strongman, I'm like, right, look up the Stoltman brothers. They're the two main people you need to know about. But yeah, they're just nice guys. I've met them a couple of times. Thank you.
They are big. And, you know, looking forward to the future, I know you've got your competitions. You've spoken a lot about wanting to have a positive impact on others. But what else is on your radar?
So this year I'm going for world's title. I haven't had the world's title yet, so that is my biggest goal this year. I've obviously got England's and Brits first. So if I can win the 2x title for both of those, that would be amazing. But yeah, we've got Worlds in November, so that's where I'm going. That's what I'm going for.
You're gonna get it. You're gonna get it. It's there. It's yours. And just lastly, in terms of, you know, inspiring others, is there anyone outside of lifting that inspires you?
Well, that's a good one. Do you know what? I'm going to say Princess Diana. Princess, I love... Diana is just... She's obviously iconic. But she was one of the people that... She didn't care what anybody thought of her. She only ever did what was right and what she felt was right. And I feel like that's kind of how I like to go through life. If I know you, and if you don't like what I'm saying, as long as I'm happy in myself, then I'm good. But yeah, Princess Diana she's a bit of an icon. But yeah, she inspired
me. I'm a fan as well. I'm a fan as well. I like the rawness and honesty and just, yeah, how she kind of dealt with things.
Yeah.
I was going to say, and for, you know, young people learning about you, seeing your story, what do you think some of the most important lessons are for them?
Just to know that I didn't just step in the gym one day and was able to throw 80 kilo Atlas stones around. It did take me 3 years to get to where I am. So just patience. And just don't be afraid to ask the big guy in the gym for a bit of help or a bit of advice. That's one of my things. Sometimes the bigger, scarier guys in the gym are actually the nicest. So if anybody in the gym ever needs a bit of help or advice, I'm always kind of there. But yeah, if anybody was kind of looking at my journey and think, wow, that's where I want to be, just baby steps. Just take every day as it comes, every session as it comes, and eventually you get where you need to be.
What do you need to wear and what are the considerations around that?
So obviously when you turn up to an event, you get given a t-shirt, event t-shirt, which is usually covered in the sponsors for the event. Usually you have to keep that t-shirt on for the whole of the event. There is athletes that are sponsored by big brands, like Cerberus and things like that, who want to wear their own t-shirts, but there's contracts out there. You have to wear what you're kind of given. Otherwise, I always wear my Gymshark leggings, comfy wise. In my gym bag, I've always got my elbow sleeves, my knee sleeves, wrist wraps. Obviously, I've got my sling that I have to wear to replace my arm. But having a well-packed gym bag is probably the most important thing. My gym bag is huge. I've got everything in it. But it's always there if I need it. I've got three or four different types of knee sleeves. I've got my elbow wrap. They're probably the most important, my wrist wraps for that. But yeah, kind of, it's like all the gear, no idea kind of thing. And snacks as well. Always have snacks.
Really. Love that. And what are some of those snacks?
Comp-wise, I usually tend to bring, like, I always have pre-workouts and stuff with me, but I'll have, like, Jaffa Cakes, Jelly Babies, that kind of stuff that gives me a bit of a sugar rush before an event. But yeah, having a good lunch as well during comp day, because my first couple of comps, I always forgot to bring, like, lunch, and then I'm stuck, and I'm like, oh, God, I need to eat.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed this. I've learned a lot about you. I've learned a lot about the sport, kind of what it takes to compete, and it's always interesting because, you know, I spoke to Alfie and I suppose she's kind of at a different stage of her career than you are.
Yeah.
And it's just good to see some of the same things that she said kind of trickle down. And, you know, she had high praise for Mark and the Stoltmans and things like that. And yeah, it was just nice to see that, you know, you guys are all really tight together.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of An Athlete's Blueprint. The authentic stories shared in this podcast aren't for everybody. They were just for you, a true sports enthusiast. Whether you're going into your next practice session or at the starting line for the finals, take the winner's insight from the athletes and the coaches you heard from today. Remember, this advice is only available on An Athlete's Blueprint podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.